Bruce Withers. They often come in.
You said it, Christopher. You said it. See what report they give me. Well, must do better.
I'll say good things anyway, even if they don't. Yeah, don't worry.
Thank you, Christopher. You'll get the check in the post. Okay, Mary and David have been called a lot of things in their time. I don't know if headmaster and headmistress is a new one or not. Okay, very good. Those of you who've just joined us, Christopher Day is already in one of the streets we're going to go to.
He always is. He always seems to know where we're heading.
Yeah. I think that's pretty impressive there, that you are actually going to be in that street in about 35 minutes, 40 minutes time. That street that Christopher said, you'll recognise it because my photo of it looks very similar. Now, do you know why I'm going to start? Because none of you came into a waiting room, did you? I've got the technology to have you straight away. So I'm going to start now because if anybody, I think there's one more, comes, then they will come in immediately. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask those of you who haven't yet muted not to mute, because I like to share my screen and then say, can you hear me? And after that, I want you to mute only because it means that every time the dog barks or you kick over a wine glass, we all hear it. So it's a good idea if you mute. And then I'm also going to ask you to turn off your video only so that it is a bit of a bandwidth. But I really hope that you are going to switch your video on again when we are finished, so that you can ask all those impertinent questions about things I've left out or even make points. So, good. So don't all mute, because it's at least a couple of you have got to tell me whether you can hear.
I can hear you.
Good.
Yes.
I haven't said anything, so I don't know what I'm doing. Whoever you are a brilliant woman because I haven't said anything. Right, can you hear me now? That's the point.
Yes, and we can see. Yeah.
And you can see a thing that says Soho, Harlots, Charlatans and Royal Bastards. Yes. You can all see that. Great, okay. So I suggest that you mute, and it's probably a good idea if you turn your video off as well. So welcome to this walk around Solo, Harlots, Charlatans and Royal Bastards. My name is Richard, and the third, I'm Richard the Third. So no wisecracks, please, about hunchback kings and being buried in a car park in Leicester. No, there is no royal connection. It is because there are currently six Richards regularly leading walks with London Walks, and I was the third. Today, we can sum up Soho in the 21st century in three words: food, music, and sex. Yes, this is the red light district, and it's changed a lot, but I don't think it's lost its cutting edge. It has been gentrified quite a lot, but it's still got that sort of slightly seedy side to it, which means it can never be turned into neighbouring Mayfair. Food, because there's fantastic restaurants in this area. Very expensive, also extremely inexpensive. Every single different cuisine under the sun. Music, because particularly in the 1960s and 70s, you could come to hear live music here. Now, there are no longer any large rock venues going, but there are a number of smaller venues, and we're going to visit those. So great music to be had in the area. And finally, sex. This is the red light district. Now, it's nothing like Amsterdam or Paris, where you see scantily clad ladies behind panes of glass. It's much more discreet than that in the English way, where they pretend it's not really happening. But it is. Now, this is the area on a map. And in fact, we're going to have a slightly wider remit than definite Soho, because in order to explain and understand how the area felt, I want to come into the south of bit, which is Soho, really, even though it's not strictly to the north of Shaftesbury Avenue. So we're going to start here. And I often start my walks with the Agas map of 1561. We're to the west of the city. You can see everybody living inside the walls. Let's get my pointer on. Still in 1561, confined to the walls. And then you have all of these, which are mansion houses of the aristocracy. And they fringe the two cities, London, and down here, Westminster. So you are well situated for business with the city and for court with Westminster. And we're going to be walking around here just by the curve of the river. This is Leicester Square, as it was in 1561. In fact, you might even recognise the name of that street, Haymarket, because there was a market for hay, and it's still called that today. So just open fields and countryside. Oxford Road, it was called the Tyburn Road, and then Oxford Road, and then Oxford Street. You might like to, you might know that as well. Now, people first came here to hunt, not what George Bernard Shaw would later refer to as the unspeakable in full pursuit of the uneatable. No, that was fox hunting. You were on a horse. No, this was duck hunting. You were on foot and you would shoot at the ducks and then you would cry "so ho" as the signal to release the dogs to go and fetch the ducks that you had shot down. Well, it's a far cry from that. The only ducks that we will see today are those that hang in the windows of the restaurants of Chinatown. And if you said to any Londoner that people ever came to Soho to hunt, they would be astonished. They wouldn't believe you. I'm talking about people who've lived here all their lives, because we think of this as the most crowded place in town. If we want to say somewhere is crowded, we say it's like Piccadilly Circus here. Piccadilly Circus here in Soho was just fields and countryside in the 17th century. So it's not developed until the latter part of the 17th century. And this guy on the left, Charles I, had the misfortune to have his head chopped off just around the corner from Soho in Whitehall. We abolished the monarchy in 1649. His son had escaped to the continent and was brought back to the throne in the restoration of the monarchy in 1660. Here he is, Charles II. Now, he had picked up a lot of continental habits. He picked up the habit of taking mistresses. I know you find it difficult to believe that a member of the British royal family called Charles should have a mistress. But this was the 1660s. With mistresses come illegitimate children, 14 of which he acknowledged. In others, there's probably quite a lot of others scampering around, but these are the ones he fessed up to. And one of his favourites was the Duke of Monmouth, and he gave him land to the west of the city of London in this area called Soho. And so where this favoured son of the monarch was, so much of the rest of the aristocracy followed. Now, he was a controversial figure, this chap, because he rebelled against his father. And then 2 years after his dad died, he attempted to claim the throne for himself because, as his father hadn't got any legitimate children, his brother, James II, had taken the throne. There was one problem with James II. He was a Catholic, and nobody wanted a Catholic. So, amongst other people, he rebelled and tried to remove the king, James II, from the throne. But he was defeated at the Battle of Sedgemoor. Well, I know what you're thinking. All this is a bit too much detail for here. But you see, during the Battle of Sedgemoor, the Duke of Monmouth had a secret password to send messages behind enemy lines. That password, I can hear you all shouting it out, Soho, the name of the area that he had come to live in, the hunting cry. So he was defeated, but he came to live here in Soho, and then he had his head chopped off. This is your set of playing cards commemorating the beheading of the Duke of Monmouth. How have you managed without that particular set of playing cards? I know, there he is, having his head chopped off, the Duke of Monmouth on Tower Hill. This chap, he's chopping his head off, is Jack Ketch. And the Duke of Monmouth said to him, "Do not hack at me as you did, my Lord Russell. Here are 6 guineas for you. I hear you took 3 or 4 strokes." So he put his head on the block. Jack Ketch brought the axe down, but only inflicted a slight wound. The Duke of Monmouth stood up, looked reproachfully at the incompetent executioner. I think he was asking for his 6 guineas back. And then he put his head back down on the block. Several chops later, Jack Ketch had to get his knife out to finish the job. Well, anyway, the area had become fashionable amongst the aristocracy in the second part of the 17th century. Robert Sidney, the 2nd Earl of Leicester, came here. Yes, I know what you're thinking now. Leicester Square, you bang on the money. It's named after him because he came to live here. And then London expands in the 18th century, beginning of the 1700s. And this is where we are, This is the area of Soho. So you can see it's developed in the 18th century and it gets even bigger. This is 1762. And you can see that London is now all developed around this area of Soho, honing in. This is Soho here and Leicester Fields. And you can see that much of it is open fields and countryside. So this is Leicester Fields, or Leicester Square, as it's known, in the 18th century, set out in a formal fashion. And you can see that there is this building here, Leicester House, where all sorts of shenanigans were going on in the 18th century. This is the square with the statue of George I in the middle of it in the 18th century. Large equestrian statue, 1750, so a few years after he died. Someone is being carried along in their sedan chair here. Now, George I, on the left here, had a row with his son, George II, on the right. His son, the Prince of Wales, refused to speak to him, so he came to Leicester Square and set up a rival court. So you were either with the king or you were with the Prince of Wales, George I or George the Prince of Wales. You couldn't not take sides. You had to be with one or the other. So he had a totally rival court in Leicester Fields, and he became the king, George II. He had a row with his son, Prince Frederick, and he came to live in Leicester Square and refused to speak to his father. So it was known as the pouting place of princes. "Hey," I hear you cry, "we never had a Prince Frederick." You're right. We never had a King Frederick because one day he was playing cricket. I think we've missed that one. Let's go back. I thought we had a picture of him playing cricket. So maybe it's afterwards. So there he is, Prince Frederick. There is his court in residence. Let's see if the next one, I hope it is. Yes, he was playing cricket and he got hit in the throat with a cricket ball. So he died. I say it served him right for playing a game that lasts for 5 days and is generally a draw. Oh, I might have made some enemies here, lover of cricket. But there we go. So he never became the king. So his father became the king. His son became the king, George the Third. It skipped a generation. That's why George III was on the throne for such a long time, because he was the grandson of George II. So he came and became the next monarch.